Welcome to In the Garden with University of California Master Gardeners. My name is Tina Spindler and I'm your host for today. You're listening to KUCI FM 88.9 in Irvine. The opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the opinions of the radio station or the University of California Regents. Welcome to the show. We have a really great show today, one that's really near and dear to my heart. It's going to be all about school gardens, how to start them, but more importantly, how to keep them going. And I have two great guests in the studio today that I'd like you to introduce to you. They are a parent and also a University of California Master Gardener. So we're going to get some information from both sides of the participants, the people who are parents of the kids who want to start the garden, and also the folks who can help those parents start the garden. So let me first introduce to you Marcy Mayetta Weinberg, and she is a parent at Tustin Memorial Academy in Tustin, or was. Her kids have now moved on. And Marcy has been an educator. She was a high school teacher and a high school administrator, and also an education consultant. But Marcy, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
I'm the mother of two middle school kids. I have a ninth grader, or an eighth grader, and a sixth grader. I started the program at TMA when my now eighth grader was in kindergarten.
Yes, and that was quite a while ago.
Over 10 years ago.
Yeah. And the garden has changed so much from those days, and frankly is one of the best gardens I have ever seen in all of the school gardens that I visited. But that's not to slight Rick Katzmeyer's garden that he's involved with. Rick is a University of California Master Gardener and also a landscape architect, and he's been involved with another school garden in Orange County. Rick, you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, the garden is Journey School along Aliso Creek, and I became involved through the Master Gardening program. It's part of the opportunities that we have as Master Gardeners. And this was something that just absolutely clicked for me. It's something that has been dear to my heart for years. I've gardened all my life. And so when the opportunity arose and the kind of chemistry was there, I felt this was a great project to be involved with.
Yes, and they are so incredibly lucky to have you. I assume they know, but I know because I've worked with you professionally, that you're a very accomplished landscape architect and have done some amazing designs throughout the community, and at least in the residential area where I've been working with you. And I know you consult to community associations, and so for them to have your knowledge is such a great asset, I'm sure.
Thank you.
So let's get started by asking each of you what prompted you to get interested in school gardens. And Marcy, you had a kindergartner and you started him at this school. And when did it first occur to you that maybe this school should have a school garden?
I did my graduate work in education at Stanford, and a big piece of that was something called problem-based learning, which allows children, basically anybody, but I was studying children, an opportunity to use a skill in a real-life situation. Well, that resonated with me through my studies, and as my children, that was well before my kids were born, so this kind of concept continued to rattle around inside my head, and when the kids were born, I kept trying to figure out how I could assist with that at the school that they ended up at.
Uh-huh.
So in kindergarten, I didn't know anything about gardening. Let's put that out there. I had what's referred to as a black thumb, frankly. We lived on a piece of property near the ocean where I think I had a 10 by 10 foot piece of concrete backyard. So simultaneous to the start of my kids beginning kindergarten, we moved to someplace else and we had half an acre of land and I didn't know what to do with it. And I thought, well, why don't I hit two birds with one stone? Why don't I start trying to learn a garden at my house and I start one at the school and use it as a basis for problem-based learning, which basically is kids using skills that they learn in science and math, social studies, language arts, any area, and make them solve a problem in the garden using what is 1 + 1? And show them, here, let's plant this seed plus this seed, and how many seeds do we get? Now, you, Tina, were instrumental in helping even kind of grow that concept. And so over time, we just kept embedding every curricular area that we could think of.
Yeah, and we'll go through some of that process as we continue our discussion. But I have to tell you, I was very excited to get to know Marcy through a mutual friend who knew that Marcy wanted to do this, knew that she didn't know how to garden. Our mutual friend knew I was a master gardener and says, hey, you two should talk. And I met Marcy at the school, and we went behind the school and looked at this pretty nasty looking empty lot. And if you could see it now, you would be completely and totally amazed. And I think that also, Rick, is kind of what you started with at Journey School. Didn't you start with kind of a nasty, empty lot also?
Yes. At Journey School, all of the classrooms are portables. And this particular plot of land, which they call now the Greenheart Garden, was filled with portables. And when I first was introduced to it, all those portables had been removed, but there was remnants of asphalt and concrete. And
oh, wow.
The way I first was introduced to it was through the Master Gardening Program, which has a kind of an outreach program to schools that want to have gardens and have Master Gardeners involved. So I was contacted and interviewed several other schools, and I went to Journey and was met with the principal and two of the parents, and it was just really wonderful. They were so enthusiastic to have somebody get involved, and I could see that the group of people that I'd be working with were very supportive, and so it blossomed into this. Now it's a 5-year program of working with the school to develop the garden, which is pretty far along now, and it involves all of the classes in different capacities, as well as the parents.
That's really a good point to make, is that you became involved through the Master Gardener Outreach Program, and that makes this a good time for me to tell people, and we'll mention it several times throughout our little discussion today, that if you are interested in starting a school garden at your child's school or just your neighborhood school, if you live in a neighborhood and you don't have kids that go there, but you still think it's a great idea, that one of the best ways to get started is by contacting the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardeners. And so I'll give you our website and our hotline so that you have those. And the website for Master Gardeners is www.uccemg.com. That's just a great website for all sorts of gardening information. If you specifically, though, want to request a site visit to your school, you can email Master Gardeners at hotline, that's HOTLINE, at uccemg.com. Now, Marcy and I kind of shortcutted that process because we had this mutual friend, but basically the result was the same, and that is that Marcy said, hey, will you come out and look at this, you know, piece of dirt and start advising us on, you know, where to go from here. But before we talk about that, can you tell us a little bit about how you got the ball rolling with the principal or administrators, or who were the powers that be that you needed to sell on this idea of a school garden?
I went straight to the school principal at the time, and she didn't know me from Adam, but I kind of shared the vision that I had for it really being a place where kids could practice academics. So I think I came in from a little different take. She was concerned that it wouldn't sustain because parents in the past had tried to start small gardens. And I really spoke with her about kind of our plan. This school is unique in that it requires 10 hours a year of volunteer time from every parent or family of children who go there. So I thought maybe we could use that pool of people as a way to provide sustainability. So I just presented a concept to her and said, you know, I'm before I go any further with this, I'd like your approval or your insights. And she said, it sounds fabulous. I don't have a dime for you, but do what you can.
That's great. And Rick, in your case, they had already made that decision, so you didn't have to go through that process, correct?
That's correct. And that was the thing that really attracted me to it. I had support from the school immediately, and they're a little different than Marcy has been talking about, because we have a budget that is set up as part of our operating budget, and the parents manage that, and we make requests for different things that we need for mulch and for seeds and for this and that and the other thing, and there's never been any question about it. They feel like we use the money wisely, and so they're always willing to meet our needs as much as possible. So it's, yeah.
And I understand the school, the Journey School, is a charter school as opposed to the typical public school. So is that why there's a budget available for this project?
Yeah, the school has yearly fundraisers, and they try to get about $50,000 a year for operations. The school is really quite wonderful. They take kids on field trips, camping trips, a number of different things, and then they run these other programs through this budget that they've accumulated each year. So there is funding that is sufficient. To, you know, it's not that it's just easy to have it, but there's the people within the school support the fundraising and show up in numbers to, you know, support each year this program that they have established. They make crafts, they make wonderful things, and then they sell those at the fundraising events. And most of these are made by the students at the school. And sometimes by the parents too. So there's a lot of enthusiasm for that. And the principal really looked at the garden as being sort of the heart of the campus.
Wow.
When I first got there, he said, you know, you really have to kind of understand how we look at this, that this is going to be the central focus of the campus. And I thought, this is an excellent beginning because it makes it very, very important. And so over the years, we've had donations of fruit trees. We've had countless hours of parents who also, like Marcy has mentioned, they have a certain amount of hours that they're supposed to put in. And then certain parents that have children in the classes at the time that we're out there working oftentimes will come in and do weeding or pruning or this kind of thing. So there's quite a bit of parental support, and then there's kind of a core group of us that are out there kind of running the day-to-day operations.
That's awesome. I can't stress enough, and I'm sure Marcy will agree with this, because I've consulted at a number of different schools throughout Orange County, and I've seen very enthusiastic either parents or teachers, but if you don't have the buy-in from the administration, it's just been my experience that it's not likely to be sustainable because, you know, parents move on, their kids get older, and that one parent can't sustain that garden by themselves, or that one teacher can't sustain it by themselves. So I think that your point about the principal being behind this and seeing this as a really integral part of the school is really important. Not to say that you can't get there, because I think Marcy started a little bit differently, and that the principal was open to the idea but wasn't the force behind this at all. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so what was your next step then, once the principal said, great idea, but you're kind of on your own to make this happen? What did you do after that?
At that time, there were a couple other mothers and a father who had expressed interest in kind of different things. One of them was interested in more campus beautification. And so we went to our parent teacher organization to ask for a couple $100 to see what we could do. And their thought was, we'll give you a couple $100 to do campus beautification. If you pass that test, then come back to us and we'll have a conversation about whatever the rest of this is that you're interested in. So we did that. We used a couple hundred dollars and did a whole kind of landscape of the front of the school, which you'd have a hard time believing. $200 could buy us anything, but it was hours of volunteer time is what did it. So again, we kind of advertised this out to the school. And so we had a number of parents and kids who were willing to come on the weekends and earn their hours and help us. So we were able to prove to PTO that, okay, you guys seem like you might have some direction. And so from there, I started with another group of people who I knew through kind of the education world looking for grant money.
Ah.
And so we were very lucky. A dear friend of mine, Emily Bauer-Roberts, wrote our first grant, and we got $1,500.
Wow.
It was a sizable grant for nothing. I mean, we didn't have anything to prove. We didn't have anything to show, which you guys know, grants are hard to come by if you don't have a track record. They want to see that, oh, it's there. So we had nothing to show them. But she's a great grant writer. We got that money. And we, at that point, then I sat down and really started to kind of design with your assistance on that whole piece about what this might look like. How could we do the seed to kind of plate concept? Plus me thinking academics, how do we tie these all together? That's kind of where the thinking began. And then we broke ground and
how did you identify that site and how did you get permission to use that site?
Good question. We had really gone all around the school campus trying to figure out, you know, what was a good place. And at that point, I wasn't even considering that size. I was thinking of more raised bed. We had a site on the other side of the school, and the father that we were working with, Kurt Christie's fabulous guy, said, "What about that?" So sitting out there was a porta potty that was used by the Little League, and weeds as high as me, and a huge storage unit that held all their emergency food or something. And it was so unattractive that all the teachers on that side of the school had papered off their windows so that they didn't have to look at that piece of property. And he said, you know, what about that piece right there? So the two of us went to the principal, and she said, ooh, I think you're going to need to talk to the district. And so we met with a district guy who kind of said, well, if you want the spot, we are not going to touch it at all. We won't help you at all. And that was a blessing. All right, somebody's saying go to it, whatever you want. So from there, Kurt, Michelle, and I really started designing and broke ground and took about 2 years, frankly, to get the whole thing up and going as a site. But we were still doing programs for the kids during all that.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's I remember what it looked like to start with, and it was definitely a challenge. It just looked like a big old vacant lot with a storage container on it, and that was pretty much it. But you, Rick, on the other hand, at Journey School, they had already moved these portables or gotten rid of them and had identified that site, even though it wasn't garden ready. They had identified it as where they wanted their garden.
That's correct. And so we had that to begin with, but that was all, basically. They did have some raised bed boxes, but it was completely open, and parents would come by and say, you will never get anything to grow here because the squirrels and the rabbits will eat you alive. Wow. And we realized, because we're close to a slope that has myriad homes for ground squirrels, that we had to do something. So the parents rolled up their sleeves and built a fence all the way around the garden with gates. And so we closed that off, and over several more years, we continued to fence and enclose areas so that we could really get the garden to grow. We also built cages that we could lift up easily off of the raised beds so that would keep the squirrels from eating the plants that were in that. So it's with that, we were able to kind of get the garden secured and then take that next step of trying to get the plants. And several of us pitched in and bought a few trees, and then we had very generous donations of bare root trees that we were able to get, and just recently we had a very, very generous grant of compost from Malibu Compost, which has helped us tremendously. Up until that time, we sort of budget what we can for fertilizer and the rest of that. The school has this great program, though. It's something like Marcy's talked about too. We integrate the students of all ages into the garden. The youngsters come in, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, and plant the seeds in the raised beds. But over the last couple of years, they've been bringing in the seventh graders, and the children are there sometimes. Excuse me, I always say children. The students are there for 15 minutes to a half hour once a week, and they have learned to prune trees. They're safe on ladders. They can sharpen their tools. They can plant just about anything. They maintain and weed, and recently we went through a grafting program with one of our master gardeners who was generous enough to give his time, and the students were enthralled. And so, that mixed in with the way Journey teaches, they have mentoring programs and they have music, and so it's not uncommon to be in the garden and all of a sudden here's a group of flute players or violinists that will come through, and next door to us is the amphitheater, which is a place that they have plays, and then the one of the teachers does woodworking, and there's a place that he has all of his tools. So sometimes there will be woodworking going on right in the garden. So.
Wow. So that just dovetails with exactly what Marcy was talking about, the experiential learning as a way to educate children rather than sitting at a desk reading and not experiencing what you're learning. I'm not an educator, but as a gardener, I can see how that would be so beneficial. And I bet the skills that these kids are learning in that way are skills that they'll retain forever. But before we, because I do want to talk more, because Marcy, I want you to give information about how your program is structured with the students. But before we do that, for our listeners, so that this can be a little bit sequential in the steps, we talked about how you got your sites identified. Rick, yours was already pre-identified by the school. Marcy, you had to get parents involved and get, a little bit of buy-in from administrators, but mostly it was up to you guys to find the site and design it and sell it. But what both of you have mentioned, though, is the importance of the parents and that none of this happens without the parents from the get-go. So I'd just like to ask you, Marcy, you first, how did you start out by, you had these few key people, but how did you make this be a broader effort by more parents, more buy-in?
A lot of arm twisting, a lot of sharing.
There's honesty for you.
A lot of sharing of a vision. Uh-huh. And I was asked to present at a faculty meeting.
So that's a mechanism.
So I went in and presented to the faculty kind of what conceptually I hoped for the program. And several of them were very excited, not capable of helping, but excited because, as we all know, public school teachers already have too much on their plates. So that helped. Some of them spoke with parents of theirs, their kids in their class. And then I just went person to person, people that I knew, uh-huh. and started kind of talking about the vision, and so did that handful of parents that I was working with. So there was probably five or six at that time who we all had, some part in that vision making. And each of us kind of started to look at our own network. And by the time I left, which was 2 years ago, the pool of parents working on an ongoing basis in that garden is about 120.
Which is why I say this garden amazes me. There are great school garden programs everywhere, but I think the key that you've identified for the program at Tustin Memorial Academy, and it may not be possible at all schools, but what made me realize early on that this was going to be sustainable was the fact that you had a parent from every child's classroom, which later grew to, I think, three parents, or now it's four. Okay, I remember first it was one, and then it grew, and now there's four parents from each classroom that are involved in this program, and that's, to me, what makes this sustainable. You have, instead of, you know, the typical room parent, you know, who handles the holiday events and, you know, things like that for each classroom, they have a garden parent in each classroom, which, you know, it, unless you assign, you know, responsibility and ownership, I think that these programs can fizzle away. But by having someone in every classroom be invested in this and wanting their child's experience to be fully realized, and then you multiply that across the whole school, it's just a recipe for success. Rick, can you tell us a little bit about how your volunteers and teachers are organized? Because there's not any one, you know, way to do it. It sounds like yours is really successful. And how do they do it there?
Yeah, what we did initially was to talk to the school about getting parents involved for specific tasks. As an example, the fence that I mentioned earlier was done by parents and teachers just by a request that we needed to enclose the garden, and we did a little sketch of what was necessary. Then the compost bins, we have the typical three-bin compost, and I did a little sketch so that the parents would know what to do, and we had a couple of parents step up with construction background and said, we can do that for you. And then there was a project, the third graders, and I think it's a lot of their parents jump in, but they each year do something of value on the campus. And they said, well, how about if the third graders build you a shed? And I said, that would be wonderful. We need a shed. And so they came out and built the shed, and it's there today, working beautifully. Other projects have been taken on by parents and their children coming out over the summer or other times to do things. So it's not probably as many people as Marcy has said, but it's a combination of people that when their children are involved in the garden at a particular age, they tend to come out and work in the garden, because Journey has three gardens on the campus. They have a kindergarten, and they have a third grade garden, and then the Greenheart garden. So parents whose children are in kindergarten will work on that garden, and third grade will be another one. And then we get the older children. But because the school has wanted to integrate all classes in the Greenheart garden, we get these youngsters in there as well, so that the kindergartners may at some time work in their own garden, but other times they come in here with the teacher support. In fact, Journey did something kind of unique. They hired one teacher to be involved with the garden as well as teach the classes that
wow.
they were involved with.
Wow.
And she is wonderful. Shelley comes out and brings the class and is very much involved in organizing and keeping all of this flowing. And this program started last year with sixth graders. I have the same class now as seventh graders, and we'll finish off with eighth graders, the same group of children. And so now they're almost becoming master gardeners, because they really know how to do it. And I actually turned the garden over to them last year over the Christmas vacation and said, you know what you're doing. Let's see what you come up with. And they went out and took notes and made a list of things that they were going to do for that month. And they were very good. And the teacher reported back. They were very excited about kind of having this hands-on experience
yeah.
of organization. So
that's great. Yeah, so that's good. Let's now talk about how these programs work through the kids' eyes at each of these different schools. You've started to give us a little vision of how it happens there. But Marcy, do you want to explain then, you know, once you had the parents involved and you got this garden, you know, constructed, which of course it evolves more and more every year, but But how did you start getting the children out in the garden? What's the structure for involving the children?
So there was a conversation with the principal and the staff, the faculty, about once a month, going out in a rotation of once a month, which would be anywhere similar, between 20 to 40 minutes, depending upon what they're doing. So our second and fourth graders do composting. They do worm and or hot composting, which takes a little bit longer than the rest of the other grades. So we had a conversation about once a month seemed reasonable. We have 700 kids.
Wow.
So even rotating them out once a month is, there's somebody in the garden all the time. So ideally, we would like to do once a week. I don't even think logistically we could figure it out.
Yeah.
But right now, they go out once a month. You've been instrumental in the piece of training. What we did, a play on words, you're a master gardener, our parents are garden masters.
Mm-hmm.
So twice a year in fall and in spring, we train them. We give them key skills. They get to choose whether they want to be a planter, they want to help kids with maintenance, they want to be teaching composting, or now we're doing garden ambassadors, where they learn to read and create a script and provide tours for adults who visit and the campus. So the parents would figure out what training they wanted. They would go through that training. Then after they were comfortable enough to take a class out, which again, keep in mind, there's about 3 to 4 per class. We divide the class out. The kids come out in rotations of anywhere from 18 to 22, depending upon how large the class is, for 20 to 40 minutes, and then they rotate, and the second half of them come out. So that group of four parents is with that group of kids. Those kids get to come out once a month, and they rotate around in those positions. So they are known as either being a planter, a maintainer, a composter, or a garden ambassador.
I know that's one of the things that, as I've worked with you and watched this evolve, have been so impressed with, and I don't know if you have any plans on documenting this as a system that could be, you know, used by other schools, but the way that Marcy has divided this up has allowed each child at that school to participate in the whole process. So they all get a chance to plant from seed. They all get a chance to maintain their garden and see the successes and failures. And I know we had to, you know, change what types of seeds we were planting and such, because we had, you know, some failures. But in the garden, there are no failures. There's only learning experiences. And it just, I love it, because the kids, because it's such a big school, you know, can't be involved as often as perhaps you might like. But because you've structured it in a way that they get to rotate through each of the responsibilities, it really, I think, gives them the full range of opportunities to see what can happen in a garden. So I applaud that.
This year, too, we're running a pilot program, so there's a different group of kids engaged, and it's not through the classroom. It's a nutrition education program that was funded by an organization in Utah, the Simon Foundation. And what they are allowing us to do is teach the child and a parent how to cook using what's grown in the garden. So we will do our third one in April. But we've segmented them, so the first cooking demo was for fourth and fifth graders and their parents, and they were selected from our garden master group. We gave them first opportunity to choose if they wanted to come with a kid, and this is at lunchtime, so it's not during class time, and we've always had more people than we can serve.
Sure.
So it's been a really outstanding opportunity for the kids to finally see, what do we do with this great produce? Because we're finding out that lots of people don't know what to do with what gets grown there. And so we've had guest chefs come in and teach the parents and the kids. We've provided a little bit of an incentive to the kids if they'll make that recipe item and bring it the next week and show the principal. They get a little voucher that they can then spend at our produce sales, which happen on Thursdays after school. So that's a new piece this year. We're hoping that that'll continue next year.
That sounds awesome. Really bringing it full circle.
Exactly.
Full circle. I'm going to take just a second to remind our listeners that you're listening to KUCI FM 88.9 in Irvine. And the opinions expressed on this show are not endorsed by the radio station or the University of California Regents. So, Rick, let's continue on. You mentioned a little bit about how the kids get involved at Journey School, and that you have the separate gardens for the kindergartner and the third graders, but then you have the larger garden that all of the students are supposed to have an opportunity to participate in. Can you tell us how that opportunity works for the student body as a whole?
Yeah, I was listening to what Marcy was saying about the food preparation. Journey also has that. We have kitchens, and they come out into the garden to gather food and cook it. But the school's basic premise is to support the garden because of healthy eating. And the principal, when he does tours on the campus, tells the people, you know, this may look like a superfluous sort of activity that doesn't really add up to anything, but in the end, what it really is teaching the students is how to grow food and make it a healthy part of your diet. And so what we try to do is, much like Marcy was saying, we will bring in the food from the garden, and we'll do a little kind of an impromptu cooking thing right in the garden where the kids, we have some little portable stoves and things like this. We'll do it rather simply. But then the students have that chance to see, here it comes right out of the garden, we prepare it, and they love it, and they sit down and eat it. And they will also go around and eat the produce from the garden right off of the plant. And the first time I saw this, it was amazing because we had sugar peas, and they said, can we go out and eat that? And I said, of course, it's all organic. We don't use any sprays. I said, just pick it and eat it. And the kids were loading their pockets up and taking it back to class instead of having, you know, some other kind of food that might not have been as healthy. And
they were watching the squirrels. They were hoarding.
Yeah. But, and then last summer, because our peach trees were so prolific, but they bloom after the students have gone, we incidentally wrap all the trees so that we have some fruit there for them to enjoy. But the teachers picked the peaches and then froze them so that when the kids came back, there was fruit for them to enjoy on the campus. Because we really want the students to be the recipient of all of the work that they put in, because they do put a lot of effort in, and we found this to be great. And boy, are they excited when they pick something that tastes so good and realize that they have had an important part of growing it.
Now, how do they get out into the garden to do their work? Is it part of a rotation like Marcy's, or is it a volunteer thing that they do during lunch, or how do they get out in the garden?
It's structured to the extent that the seventh graders are now kind of the assigned students in the garden. So they come directly from their class out to the garden, and I'll give them a little talk about, you know, something that's going on. And then, and we're not quite as structured as Marcy described, which I think is a great idea. But what I suggest is, because I know the students well, I'll say, you know, you have a choice of either composting or pruning or weeding or planting. And then they break up in teams and go out and do the work. And and the other parents that are in the garden and I will watch and be able to help them out. But we have found that they have gotten comfortable enough with the garden to really be very, very competent. They go and get the tools that they need, bring them out, and start the work. And some days it's a half an hour. But the teacher has said, if they miss a week, the teacher hears about it. They absolutely want to come out in the garden. And I say, is this just to get out of class? And she said, no, absolutely not. They are really looking forward to coming into the garden. So I think the basic concept that the school had hoped to develop with the students participating in the garden really does work. And it's taught them the value of growing things. It's taught them the value of going out and working, and the familiarity with the garden, because they will describe over the summer, maybe they've gone to their grandmother's and worked in the garden, or during the weekends they go home and work with their parents. So I think it does carry over into a very practical learning experience.
So are they there once a week? There's a once a week time for them to come in the garden, and that's when you're there and when the parent volunteers are there?
Yes, every Wednesday at about 8:30. The school starts at 8:30, so about 8:45 they show up, and sometimes it's, you know, depends on what their curriculum is for that day, but it can sometimes be 45 minutes, which is pretty nice. They can get a lot accomplished in that time.
Yeah. And well, and if you're working with seventh graders, I mean, they're capable at that age. Yeah. They're quite capable.
They are. In fact, last week we actually had them be the teachers for the youngsters planting seeds. And so we brought out three or four at a time, and I said, okay, your job now is to hand them the seed, and I showed them basically what to do, and they really know. But then, you know, planting the seeds in the rows, and the little kids are very, very good. I've found that I don't really use the foot square principle. I'll lay out rows, or the students will lay out rows, and the kids are very good at dropping the seeds in at a prescribed space. When I tried the foot square, I found that there was just a mix of all kinds of seeds very, very close, and it sort of drove me nuts. I had to be a little more systematic.
Yeah. Well, we're going to share something with you, because Marcy figured out how to make the square foot garden method work. So you want to share? Because I love what your, I think it was a dad that designed the
plexiglass squares.
Yeah. So tell our audience what they did.
Yeah, so, you know, we were having that problem too, and I kept coming back to Tina saying they're growing in these masses, and then their fingers are just not coordinated enough to tease out, you know, the seedlings as they start to grow. And so we did a little bit of talking, and one of the dads came up with, you know, we had a father, I think, either donate or give to us at a very inexpensive price, plexiglass. They cut it down into the 12x12s, and then we drilled holes in them. I mean, it's
nice.
It's part of the strategy that other people use, but per exactly what we're making, or what we're growing, excuse me. So we do carrots on a regular basis, radishes, lettuce. We do potatoes, which doesn't apply, but so we have them as templates that just stay in our barn.
That's a
and
great
they're,
idea.
They're labeled with Sharpie on them, and so it's very clear. And for some classes it works, and what's beautiful, as you're saying, is every class may be different, and the parents that are teaching our kids all have their own different style. The row may work for them, and some say, I really want to refer to square foot. And then we rotate per season, so we do outside one seed, and then the inside of the planter is another seed, which you helped us with too, because sometimes something would harvest right at the time that we were switching over for seasons, and then the kids didn't get to harvest, and they were upset, so Tina's helped us figure that out, the logistics.
Yeah, and that's one of the things for our listeners to understand, that, you know, a school garden does not need to be like a classroom math experience where you are progressing from lesson one to lesson two and you want to cover, you know, 30 lessons in a semester or whatever. The garden is something where both the parents, the teachers, and the children are all learning as you go. And that's why when I go to Tustin Memorial Academy twice a year and train the parents, the first thing I tell them is there are no failures in this garden, none. Now, you may end up having not a single seed sprout, but that is not a failure. That is a learning experience.
Right.
You will still get to teach the kids, you know, hey, we had Santa Ana winds, and it was a four-day weekend, and no one was here to water, and the seeds dried out, and so they didn't germinate. But it's not a failure. It's a way to teach the kids the lesson of what gardening is all about. And speaking of that, I would also now like you guys to share a little bit about the kinds of lessons maybe that you see the kids learning when they're out there. Not just necessarily, you know, how to plant a seed, but are there other things that you've seen them learn that are either beneficial to other subject areas or beneficial to learning how to be a good citizen, etc.? Rick, do you have some experiences to share?
Yeah, the one case in point, we were talking about tool maintenance and care, and the one student said, Oh, I'm familiar with that. Our woodworking class showed us how to sharpen tools, so now I'm familiar with how to do that, and so we had the file and sharpened the pruning tool, so they were able to put these two different ideas together. The art class comes out and actually does sketches when there are blossoms on the trees. Teachers, if they're doing math, will bring the students out and try to make some kind of a project that relates to the garden and the numerical. I think you mentioned something, Marcy, that the numbers of things, trying to knit it all together. But I think they also learn kind of the basics. I remember the first time I started with the children, and we were looking at a compost pile, and the girls said, "Oh, I cannot stand earthworms." And so I talked to them about the earthworms. And now they reverently go around and hold an earthworm in their hand and find it a new place in the garden. And so this whole fear of insects and worms and things is pretty much gone. They can now go around and identify the beneficial and non-beneficial insects. And they'll come back and say, "Oh, we just saw a mealybug," or "we saw an aphid." And they're asked to tell what that particular bug does, why it's either good or bad, and they can identify that. So that, I think, is it really extends the learning experience of the garden out into broader areas.
So you're talking about them incorporating lots of different subject areas into their garden experience.
Yes.
They're not just learning the gardening skills. They're learning science lessons. They're learning math lessons. They're learning art and other lessons.
Yes.
Which I think Marcy started out by saying the garden is just this amazing place for all this experiential learning in so many different areas. And what have you seen at Tustin Memorial Academy? Because I also hope that in discussing this, you take us to the farm stand concept as well and talk a little bit about those lessons, because I think that's really unique about your garden.
So, yes, I came at this from a very educational perspective, but the kind of byproducts of the whole experience have been remarkable to me, things I could not have foreseen. One, you and I have talked about at length, which is the parents' engagement in the garden has created a kind of energy amongst families to kids seeing their parents out in the garden with them, with other parents that they would typically not interact with. I like to refer to the TMA garden as a model UN. I mean, it is a United Nations.
Very diverse. Mm-hmm.
Where people are talking across all ethnic backgrounds, all racial, all socioeconomic.
Even languages, I've noticed.
Yeah, and it's so interesting. The reality is we all have, over time, farmed. We all love food. So it's a lovely place for children to kind of learn about collaboration. So that's an absolutely amazing outgrowth. Plus, the number of parents who have started gardens, who've started harvesting water, who are composting at their own house. The number of parents now, again, so we saw this need between the kids who were growing this lovely produce and taking it home and saying it died because nobody at my house knew what to do with it. So this was what this nutrition program is this year, which is trying to get the parent out here and get them together, the child and the parent, to say, we now know what to do with this. So to me, it's exciting because we're strengthening kind of a piece of family that is getting lost, and you know, it's the art of cooking is going away because of technology and many other things that distract children and parents. So that's a lovely byproduct. I would say just generally, and you touched on it, stewards of the planet. The kids are remarkable about what they see out there and how they will say to each other, "Don't touch that chrysalis of that monarch butterfly. Yeah. If you do, it will turn black and we'll lose it," or "Please be careful, there's eggs under there." I mean, they're just aware of things that they never would have been. We, I think, cataloged when we first started that the number of kids who would come out to the garden who would go, "Ew, yuck, I don't want to touch the dirt," was probably about 25%. We used to have kids who just simply wouldn't touch the dirt. And so the year that I left, we had one kid who came out and was bothered about touching the dirt, and it was only because of an allergy. So, you know, we look at that and say that's huge success, that kids are making contact with the soil. And not only that, kids are learning about soil and the science of soil and what's important about what we eat, how we tend to that soil. So the benefits are so enormous that I couldn't even begin to count. They just go on and on and on. And I have to touch, too, on leadership. I mean, this is an opportunity for kids to come out there. And like you said, if you've got seventh graders in that position, we do the same where we do a mentoring program with the fifth graders, teaching the younger kids all about the garden, and the two of them together become our ambassadors and take parents on tours. And that relationship between those two and those fifth graders, what they see as, this is my responsibility to tend to this entire area and be sure nobody vandalizes it. And those little kinder and first grade kids who, you know, stand there with their, you know, chests out so proud that they too take on that kind of cloak of, this is my responsibility. It's all good.
Yeah, it is good. And as a... former accountant, that was what I was in my real career, accounting and finance. One of the things that just I love is that they have taken their production of all of this great produce, and Marcy, I think, mentioned a little earlier that on Thursdays, Tuesdays after school, they have a produce stand, and the parents, you know, of course, encouraged by their children who have grown all this stuff, sell this, and they use the funds then to continue to fund the activities and supplies that the garden needs. And I think as a, you know, a business major, that is so valuable to the kids that they actually are getting a little economics lesson and a little business lesson. And that, you know, yes, our time in the garden is great fun and we're learning math and science and some other great things. But you know what? This is how it works in the real world. If you don't grow this stuff and you're a farmer, you're not going to make any money that week to, you know, feed your family, pay your rent, whatever. And so in a very small way, these kids are getting to see the whole economic side and the importance of their hard work and what it ends up giving back to the community and in a way that they can relate to, because they all go to the grocery store, right? So
yeah. So this past year, or the last year that I was there, it costs the school about $5,500 to operate the garden. And that is bare bones. And again, I have to kind of comment that Kellogg has been our partner since the get-go and has provided thousands of dollars worth of organic amendments. That's just, as Rick noted, that's a huge expense. So it's a gift that they have given that to us. But above that, we spend about $5,500 on vendors, seeds, anything else you could imagine. And the year that I left, we made $12,000 in either produce sales or grant writing. And so the kids, those garden ambassadors, as they would learn their scripts, learned that not only were we funding ourselves, we were giving back to PTO to buy any kind of electronics. They were doing smart boards. And the kids thought that was pretty amazing. We were in the black and giving.
Wow, that is amazing. Yeah. I mean, and teaches them, you know, the principles of business. Yeah. You know, you want to do this so that you can make money, and then this money can be used for, at the school, you know, these other wonderful good things. So, great. Both of you are doing amazing work. Your two schools, and I know, Marcy, you've departed, but I am still... involved a little bit twice a year to go out and train the parents. And I have to tell you that even though Marcy is gone, the thing is still going very strong. And I'm pretty hopeful that it will for the indefinite future. So I thank you so much for getting it started. And Rick, thank you so much for showing what the involvement of Master Gardeners can do to get these programs started and also sustained. And I just finally want to encourage anyone who's listening who wants to start a school garden, get out there and give it a try. Master Gardeners are there to help you. Again, if you want to send an email requesting a site visit, you can go to hotline@uccemg.com Or just visit the Master Gardener website at www.uccemg.com. That website does have a tab for youth gardens that will give you some additional information about youth gardens. And I think Marcy and Rick would both agree that if you teach a kid to plant it, they will eat it. And I think we're all wanting to get our kids to eat more veggies.
They will.
Yeah. So thank you both so much.
Thank you, Tina.